Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
Oh my goodness, guys, I'm excited. It's a top 10 for you. I love top 10s.
I know. This is different, though. We're starting a new series of top 10s. This is top 10 comments. So this was due to popular demand, and by that I mean two people tweeted at us. Like,
I was told this is top 10 decks that could use Spellskite in the main.
Oh. No. I lied to you. Though, in helping your note, thanks to goldfish.com, I think is what it's called, or something along those lines. They do a lot of statistics on Modo. Spellskite is technically number four.
I thought you said four before the podcast.
I said four before the podcast. It's number four in all most played cards in Modern.
That makes sense.
Tarmogoyf.
I mean, I don't think that it being the fourth most played card in Modern actually does any more for its case for me, because I feel it should be the number one most played card in Modern.
I think it actually was also the most played creature.
Yes, and it makes sense because it's colorless. It has a colorless activation, and it is a four of or a three of in almost every single sideboard.
Okay.
I've said for a long time, not just that I think it's
I don't
think
it's a four of in any sideboards.
A lot of sideboards that I've seen. Every sideboard I build.
That's
No, that's a lie. It's not in any of the sideboards I build because it's in the main deck as a four of. No. My thing is that I just think that there are. I mean, I want to talk about our top 10 here, but I think that if you were to focus on a card that you could just like edge out in game one against the most decks in Modern, if you started your deck as a four of around it, if you were to say like, okay, I'm going to build my deck as a four of with four Spellskites, that's the card you would start with. It's the sideboard card that would be in every main deck if you felt that that was like the advantage, and I do. So I think that there's, and this is a legitimate thing. I know this sounds silly and we joke about it, but if you sit down with four Spellskites and you go, okay, what is the most effective way to build my deck in a powerful way that starts with these four cards? I think that eventually you'll see a deck where somebody comes out and that's like a thing. They're like, I started with four Spellskites and I won this Grand Prix.
And that's when you start main decking Twisted Image.
Yeah, exactly.
So today we're doing top 10 commons. Eventually this will be followed by top 10 uncommons, top 10.
I don't know if we can do top 10 rares. That's like, seems really.
That's so generic. Maybe top 10 mythics, maybe, because that's so like, that's a back to more specific. We might just skip rares.
Commons and uncommons like seems like
top,
it's
top 10 basic lands.
Yeah,
snow cover mountain.
Something, yeah. Maybe
snow covered lands and then regular lands.
I would like to do commons, uncommons, and then start to classify like types of cards. So like top 10 combo cards or something like that, where you know like a Splinter Twin.
Well, I feel like before we get to those, we still have to finish all of the different card types.
Yeah.
So we've only done top 10 artifacts, I think, at this point, and we definitely have all the top 10 colors still to do.
Wait, artifacts wasn't top 10 colorless cards? It was top 10 artifacts?
Yeah,
sure?
It wasn't colorless cards, it was artifacts.
Interesting. Okay, yeah, we're killing time
Emrakul
here.
Emrakul didn't make the list.
Let's get to our top 10.
All right, so
we're going to count backwards?
Count backwards. And then we have, so this is going to be slightly different. We have our top 10, and then we have each of us have picked our top 5 or 6 cards we wish were played more, but couldn't make that list.
It's like sort of
there are a lot of commons out there.
It's like a list of like cards you wish saw more play / cards that maybe see play that you wish were used like more creatively, kind of a thing. But yeah, we have our classification.
That could be the difference between how we picked.
Okay, fair enough. Cards. I'm speaking for both.
All right.
Of us.
So, I guess bring this up. Even if a card has been more recently printed as uncommon, as long as it has had a printing within the Modern format as common, it was allowed to be included.
So the biggest exclusion here is Rancor, because its original printing is common, but it was reprinted as an uncommon, and the version that is legal in Modern is uncommon. Whereas I think there are three commons that were shifted to uncommon in Masters or Modern Masters 2.
A lot more than that, but that's, I mean, but like
three notable
ones, yeah.
Right? Like a Tribal Flames, a couple others that were shifted. Yeah, Bolt, that were shifted over to uncommon. So as long as there was a common printing that is legal in Modern, we can use them on the list.
Right.
But
plus, like Doomblade used to be uncommon, now is uncommon.
Yeah.
Or it used to be common and now is uncommon.
Right. So
because removal in general in sets have been moved up, so if it's a reprint, they're gonna
got it. Before we get into it, I do want to just really quick shout out, be sure to check out Command Zone, which is our sister podcast on rocketjump.com. Jimmy Wong and Josh Sequai, who are awesome dudes, they do a great job, and that's the other half of what we're doing here, so be sure to check their podcast out. And without further ado, I think we should get to it.
If you disagree, want to argue, or like at the moment just need to shout at us, we are at the MMcast on Twitter.
Oh yeah.
At the very end we'll tell you our personal Twitters, but just for the purposes of yelling at us while we're listing our cards.
Yeah. We kind of like both have our own sort of like the way we go about these lists, but I have a feeling they'll be pretty reflective of one another. So I'm going to jump in.
This one was a little easier. There's at least like a few slots that are just like auto includes.
Well, yeah, I mean the top like one or two. But then right, again, so... I thought that about Spell Scout and I was wrong. So, well, according to you, so not my number 10 is a newer card. It's a Fate Reforged common. Goes by the name of Gurmag Angler.
Okay. I do have this on my list.
It's one of the only cards in Modern that sees a significant amount of play that costs seven or more. Like, there's only
right,
a few.
Yeah. The one thing I've, like, one going through everything, I would even argue that it's, there is one card, and it's my number 10,
yeah,
that is over two mana other than Gurmag Angler.
Yeah, they're all really, really cheap cards for the most part. Yeah, I mean, the other...
That, well, that's, like, it's hard to print high power level... commons that are modern level power level that cost more than three mana, because like the power level of a four drop that I'm playing in Modern is insane. Like,
right,
most planeswalkers and like mythics don't
yeah,
even like reach the level of power level needed in Modern at a four drop.
Yeah.
So like these are cards like, you know, Birthing Pod or Splinter Twin, where like they like either are value engines to an extreme or will instantly win you the game. And for that to be a common, which means that in a, some draft environment out there, there was a common that was as good as those cards.
Yeah, well,
unlikely.
I mean, and also because like Delve is a silly mechanic where it's, right, like, right, it's not really an accurate casting cost. Nobody ever plays Gurmag. Well, they have, but it's rare you would ever play Gurmag
in reality. Most of these cards cost one mana.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Including Gurmag Angler. Yep. But for you guys who don't know, it's a 5/5 Delph. So in reality, it's a one mana 5/5 at times, and that's insane.
It's one black, six colorless for a 5/5 zombie fish that has Delve, and that's what it does. And
yeah.
Chapin unveiled his first modern brew at this. It was, I think, I want to say it was a dredge list.
No. So he played, it was an Esper list. That was also the first time anyone was playing the Mishra's Bauble.
Right.
He, like, that's where he showed both of them and was like, it was basically Esper Delve is what he called it.
Yeah.
And it played four Tassiger, four Gurmag Angler, and just was, like, it was kind of the era right after Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time were banned.
So he was like, let's
and
just shift over.
And it wasn't just kind of that, it was literally that. And he was like, well, what are other really powerful Delve cards?
Yeah.
And where most of Channel Fireball went towards the Infect plan, like, Infect
yeah,
was one of the higher plays there,
yeah,
because
yeah,
they're
become
like,
immense.
Become Immense is insane. Chapin was much more on the plan of Tassiger, and then he was like, well,
five,
what if I just play Gurmag Angler? And then he started winning with, I mean, he kind of talked about this when
he got made fun of by like a lot of people right when it happened.
Yeah.
And we actually, there's an older episode of the podcast, if you guys haven't listened to, where he's on here and we talked to him a little bit about that deck and just, I think, I'm pretty sure we talked to him about building that when he unveiled it and how much he likes Delve. So I recommend checking that episode out. What's your number 10, Kessler?
My number 10 is Pestermite.
Really?
Yeah. So I know you were like, we had a conversation about Pestermite on the way getting water before we started recording, and you were pretty hating on it. I was like, oh man, it's on my list. But basically, it is a card that has seen more tournament play than any other, like almost any other common.
Okay.
In the, in
one
the
blue,
format,
two
it,
colorless, 2/1 flying. I believe he's a fairy rogue. Might be a fairy.
No, you're correct.
Fairy rogue.
Yeah,
when he enters the battlefield, you may tap target permanent.
Or untap target permanent.
Yes, and no, tap or untap target permanent, right?
Yeah.
You don't get to do both.
No, you pick one.
Yeah,
pick yeah, one. Yeah.
There is a difference, though, with this and Deceiver Exarch, right? One of them is only...
Deceiver Exarch can only tap opponents' things and untap your own things.
And this one can do either.
Pestermite can untap your opponents' things and tap your things as well as the reverse.
Here's the reason I didn't put Pestermite on my list, okay? So everybody knows Deceiver Exarch, which is an uncommon, which is the 1/4 cleric wizard, maybe? Cleric. Knight
know,
or something like that from New Phyrexia.
Definitely not a cleric knight, but keep going.
Something and cost three. It's the four of, the preferred four of in Splinter Twin lists.
Yeah.
So you nowadays you'll see four Deceiver Exarchs and you'll see two Pestermites often.
In the non-tempo builds, but sure.
Yeah, people will like mess around, but the thing is, if I understand it's because you get four Deceiver Exarchs is the reason you see two Pestermites. But the thing is that before Deceiver Exarch was printed, nobody would have played a deck in Modern that only had four copies.
Deceiver Exarch and Splinter Tomb were in the same deck, so no one played any type of the deck.
Right. Well, okay. My point that I'm trying to make here is that Pestermite is
overtly unpowerful unless you're playing Splinter Twin.
Because
it has one toughness,
and Deceiver Exarch has four toughness, and Lightning Bolt is the most played card in Modern, so you can't really get away with playing four Pestermites and expecting it to work out because it'll just get killed by the most common removal spell. On top of which, the only other deck in Modern that would think about playing Pestermite is a Fairies deck. And guess what? The Fairies decks don't play any Pestermites.
There is a reason it's number 10. It's on the list because of there are cards that are higher. They are a higher power level, but have seen way less play. I mean, Gurmag Angler has seen way less play than Pestermite has in the history of the format.
But you could play Gurmag Angler in any number of decks, and it would have the same sort of level of power.
True, which is why Gurmag Angler is higher from on my list than Pestermite. But Pestermite comes in my top 10 for that reason.
In my Cleric Tempo deck, I would probably play four Deceiver Exarch. But in my Fairy Rogue deck with Uno's Gate Warden and Uno's Prowler.
Would you really play Deceiver Exarch in your Cleric deck? Especially because why are you playing blue? But okay.
Yeah, anyway.
Going to number nine, I'm going to say my number nine because we literally just talked about it. It's Gurmag Angler.
Okay.
Yeah, so get that out of the way. It's higher on the list because it is a newer card. It hasn't seen a ton of play. It definitely will see play forever. Foil copies, I found out, are going for like almost $30, which is insane. So if you have foil Gurmag Anglers, congratulations.
That's interesting.
And didn't know that. You just made money, as I told you.
It's really good. I mean, that card's powerful. My number nine. Oh, go ahead.
The original Delve Black Creature was a staple in Legacy and Modern and everything else. And this is just arguably better because it can be one mana cheaper.
Yeah, it is pretty interesting. I mean, it's also interesting that we haven't seen Hooting Mandrills really make a large impact in Modern yet. Like, it costs one less mana and it has one less power and one less toughness. Otherwise, it's the same card, right? Or is it Trample, too?
It has Trample, but it's a 4-4 for one less mana. But the mana doesn't really matter. 4-4 is a big deal because it doesn't fight through Rhinos, nor does it fight through Tassigers, and it doesn't really fight through Tarmogoyfs usually.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, and the original deck that Hooting Mandrills was like, oh, we should maybe play that in that deck, would be Dredge decks.
Yeah.
And Gurmag Angler is just infinitely better because of the zombie card type.
Right.
So, like, the fact that you can rebuy Gravecallers is really important.
I mean, look, you don't have to convince me the 5-5 is better than a 4-4. It just is. It's just interesting that you have another creature that is similar and is not legendary that hasn't seen, like, a tremendous amount of play yet. So
I mean, because it goes Gurmag Angler, then Tassigar, then Hooting Mandrills.
You can only play so many Delve cards. Yeah. My number nine is a recent all-star on the competitive circuit, and that's Dispel. Dispel has been aggressively printed. I think Wizards really likes this card a lot because they seem to keep reprinting it. It was originally printed, I think, in Zendikar as a common. It's one blue, instant, counter-target instant. And I know that was it Worldwake or Zendikar? It was one of the two that originally got printed.
I think Zendikar had...
Spell Pierce. Okay.
Which barely missed my list.
Yeah, because Pierce is a card that it used to see a lot more play. It sees play in Legacy, and it used to see play sort of in these like tempo-y kind of Delvery decks in Modern. But I think what people realized more and more and more was that really what you ended up countering a lot of the time in Modern was an instant spell. And the fact that like late game, Dispel still counters Cryptic Command. It still counters and, Electrolyze. It's still
right. And I think Spell Pierce would make like a top 20 list pretty easily and handedly because it definitely still see play. It's like one of or two of it's really good with Snapcaster Mage, etc. But I think Dispel right now, especially, we've talked about this before. There are so many instants in this format. Like the decks that you wouldn't expect to have instants now have Collected Company. So really you have a target against every deck you're playing against.
Right.
So Dispel just has gained so much more value as a card.
I also think one of the biggest shifts that we've seen recently, and this is one that I experienced quite a bit over the summer in the PPTQ season, was that burn decks, rather than just jamming your sideboard with life gain cards, you started to realize that Dispel was actually a powerful card to be playing against burn decks.
I mean, Negate has always been pretty decent against burn.
Yeah, and so when you start to think about turns 4, 5, and 6 against a burn deck, if you've stabilized a little bit, having just drawing Dispels against that deck mid to late game is not bad. It's just a 1-for-1 with their card. It's essentially like a 1-mana 3, you know, gain 3 that's going to have game against a lot of other strategies.
1-mana gain 3 target player discards a card is not a bad card against burn.
Yeah, exactly. So it's definitely pretty interesting, and I like to spell a lot, so I find myself using it more and more.
All right, number 8.
Yep.
So my number 8, to kind of go along with blue spells and Spell Pierce, Delver of Secrets.
Oh, it's number 8 for you, huh?
Yeah. So it's number 8, and this is a specific only to Modern ranking. So in the early days of Modern, Delver saw a ton of play
because
Ponder and Preordain were legal. Then those were banned, and then saw some play. But it's never really been as powerful as it was in Standard when Ponder was a card, or in Legacy because Brainstorm and Ponder exist in Legacy. And just it's never really been as powerful as other cards have been. And it definitely was one of the cards when I was making my list that jumped around its placement. I lowered it eventually because in the history of the format, even and especially right now, Delver isn't that good.
Yeah, it's definitely pretty funny when you think about the fact that one of the things in Modern that has been avoided in design over the years, and I think they're pretty aware of this, is that they don't want to have effects that can put cards from your hand on top of your library. And that's an effect that plays well with Delver. It's something that you get to see in Legacy with, obviously, Brainstorm. And when Jace was legal in Standard, right, with Delver, you could do it.
Which I think is a mistake, by the way. I think a 2-mana Brainstorm would be very good.
Or Jace was never legal with Delver. I take that back. It was they were separated. But, I mean, yeah, it's just the
Delver was the sequel to Jace.
Yeah.
We, like, left, oh, God, Jace, blue-white decks Cobbled. Running Standard into, oh, great.
Yeah,
blue-white Delver decks running Standard.
So I definitely think that that's something they've avoided. And if they print a card at any point that is going to allow you to do that, to actively reset the top of your library in a better way, or put cards from your hand on top of your library in a better way, Delver gets better. It also just makes a lot of other cards in Modern a lot more dangerous. That's not something. I mean, that's you.
True.
I've been championing that stupid card, Survivor of the Unseen, for a while, which for any of you listening is just not a good card at all.
I think an anticipate like version of Brainstorm, where it's a 2-mana yeah, instant speed is fine, or yeah, a 1-mana sorcery speed, like Brainstorm but for 2 cards, so draw 2, put 1 back on top.
Yep.
I think both of those would be relatively safe in the format.
Yep.
I think the 1-mana one maybe is too safe.
Yep.
As I'm saying this, Ben is taking the card he was just talking about because it happens to be a common, and he is writing it in his list, so he now has 7 cards.
I'll make cuts. Let's keep going.
One based off of a fact that I forgot I only have 4.
Yeah.
But we're going to continue. All
you
right.
You can use one of mine.
So what's your number 8?
My number 8 is Ancient Grudge. And Ancient Grudge obviously is extremely played in Modern. It's a sideboard card. This is unlike Spellskite. You would never play this in a main deck. It serves no purpose in a main deck. It doesn't,
unless you have some weird, you want to blow up your own artifacts.
Yeah,
I did in a commander game the other day. I had a indestructible artifact in play, but I had a storm spell,
right?
And so I double casted Ancient Grudge on the thing I controlled because right, they had no artifacts for some reason, just to get my storm count up so I could get a bunch of lands. And then I had Borgramos and I killed them with it. It was great.
There is a deck that I know has been kicked around a little in more of a casual environment. Our buddy Eric, who is like the father of Highlander Roulette, we've talked about it before, where you're essentially trying to come up with a strategy to turn your opponent's permanents into artifacts, and then you're playing like Shatterstorm and...
Oh yeah, there's I've seen a few lists that kind of play around with
Destructive Revelry,
ideas.
Shattering Spree, Ancient Grudge.
March of the Machines.
Well, because Liquid Metal Coating is the card that you turn to for the consistency.
No, there's the other one. There's the 4-mana one that turns all permanents into artifacts.
Okay.
What is it called?
No, there's Mycosynth Lattice.
Mycosynth Lattice
costs 6.
So the deck in Modern is March of the Machines into Mycosynth Lattice.
Okay.
You destroy all their lands.
Right.
Because and all your lands, but you have a 6/6.
Right.
So that's kind of one of the decks that's out there. That one's cool. I can see that doing something like with Ancient Grudge, but
it's a weird idea. I mean, Ancient Grudge is not in here for that. Ancient Grudge is in here because Ancient Grudge for
every red green deck and or deck that's milling themselves plays Ancient Grudge in their sideboard.
It's 1 red, 1 colorless for an instant. It was originally printed in Mirrodin, right, or Fifth Dawn or something. Am I making that up? It got reprinted in Innistrad. That's where it came back. I feel like the original Ancient Grudge was from
Time Spiral. No, it's for sure Time Spiral. Time Spiral. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense because
Time Spiral block is the only flashback set in Modern.
And it's the art's way uglier. Yeah, it's kind of the art's just kind of like random in both actually.
It's fire.
Yeah. Burning. But anyway, yeah. So it got reprinted in Innistrad and it's good. It has flashback.
Yeah.
Off color flashback. It can blow stuff up. Go ahead.
My original playset of Ancient Grudges, I traded them the day before they were split in Innistrad. Made a good $28.
Did you really?
Yeah.
They were that much money?
They were $7 each. I had a playset. I traded
them
away.
Holy moly.
And literally the next day, they got spoiled.
I have 35 Time Spiral Ancient Grudges. They're still sitting in a box. Like,
Now worth nothing.
No, they're not worth anything. Wow, it's impressive.
All right, so we are on number 7?
Yes.
Cool. Mine is Wild Nactl, or Nacatl.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, did you add that after? Was that your number 10 that you added?
No.
How did I not put Wild Nacatl on my list?
Know. My number 10 is the next one that I added. It kind of like, it's complicated. Oh,
damn it. We tried to fact check. I can't believe that I forgot Wild Nacatl. It's totally more powerful than these cards. Well, yeah, maybe not. All right, that's fine.
Yeah, you're good. Okay, so Wild Nacatl, for those that don't know, it's a green mana Delver Secrets. No, it's,
yeah,
it's... For one green mana, you get a 1/1 that if you control also a plains and a mountain, it is a 3/3. It was banned.
He gets plus one for each of those two types one time. So if you have a plains, it's a 2/2. If you have a mountain, it's
a 2/2. So it is a max a 3/3 for one, which is really good. It was banned out of it wasn't legal in Modern for years. They unbanned it. It actually didn't end up doing a whole lot once it was unbanned. Obviously, it's super powerful. Every zoo deck out there, every Naya deck out there plays, like, starts with four of these. It's been good since it was printed. One mana, 3/3. So you're talking about how Gurmag Angler is good as a 5-mana, 1/1, a 5/5 for one. And that's after you doing a lot of work. This is a 3/3 for one with doing zero work.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess maybe I did come across this in my mind, because now I'm looking at my list and I'm actually not really feeling like I would put it ahead of these cards. Just because I think Nicotl, like, there was a time when that card was really powerful in Modern, but the fact remains that Burn is one of the most played strategies in Modern. So putting yourself to 17 on turn one to play Nicotl, and probably putting yourself to 14 on turn two, because that's the way your deck works, is probably not the best idea in the format, especially with Lightning Bolt running around.
Sure.
Just trading, like, starting three for Nicotl, and then just it gets bolted.
Mind you, it also, like, brick walls Goblin Guides all day. So
yeah, it's true, and it gets blocked by, you know.
I mean, it's not number one. Once again, like,
the
cards at the top are either kind of newer cards, questionable cards like Pestermite, or cards that, like, are overtly powerful. Like, you can't argue Delver Secrets isn't one of the top 10 creatures maybe ever printed.
Right.
But it doesn't see that much play in Modern. Juan Nicotl sees more play than Delver Secrets. It's in more decks, and it is overtly easier to be powerful. Like, the deck doesn't have to work as hard for that card to be powerful. But for a skew of reasons, it hasn't seen as much play in Modern.
I guess we should move on from it. But I guess if I was really thinking, it might slot somewhere in between my 6 and my 8. Like, I'm not really sure. But anyway, so that was number what for you?
7.
Okay, so my number 7 is Terminate.
Sure.
1 red, 1 black. Instant destroy target creature. There's nothing else going on here. It's originally a Shards of Alara or a Conflux common.
No. It was originally like a.
Plane Shift. Yeah. It was originally from Plane Shift.
Like, way back in the day.
The second set in the Invasion block back in like 2001 or 2000 or something like that.
The second gold block.
Yeah, I think I have 8 or 9 Plane Shift ones, but
It's Modern legal, printed as a common in Shards of Alara block.
Yeah.
I guess the reason it was like a bubble card. It definitely was on the edge. If we were doing a real honorable mentions, it probably would have made it there versus cards like I want to see play.
Yeah.
I didn't include it. It hasn't seen a lot of play until very, very recently.
Yeah, which is funny. So it didn't used to see play, right? And back when Jund was a thing, it would see a little bit of play in Jund.
Even then, it was like a
fringe, like a
78th card.
Yeah, but it sees lots of play in Grixis decks, and Grixis became prominent with the printing of Kolaghan's Command and the power of Gurmag Angler. So I think once like there was a home for it, it was a card that was always like...
Well, Jund and it plays it. I think Rhino helped it a lot. The fact that Rhino is just a threat. So now you have Tarmogoyfs, Rhino. You have all these just like dirtily big dudes, including Gurmag Anglers and Tassigers, that like it gained a lot of value for that reason. It's definitely powerful. It's the really the only Dewblade variant that sees play in the format.
Yeah, I think what happened was that it was one of those cards where it was sort of like in the beginning of the format, people were like, what's good? What are the prime removal spells? What should I play? And then it was like, well, this, and this are a little better than Terminate, so we'll just try these. And then it was the status quo. You just play these cards, not Terminate. And then once it swung back around, people were like, oh, this card's really, really good.
Right. I also think that the fact that Birthing Pod got banned made it much better.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I think the fact that, you know, the number one deck in the format isn't running 4 Kitchen Finks, 4 Voice of Resurgence, makes Terminate a lot better.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right, so number 6. So, Spreading Seas.
Oh, that's in your top 10.
Yeah.
That's in my honorable mentions.
Okay, so
there you go. I love Spreading Seas.
Yeah, I love Spreading Seas.
Love it. Like,
This is up here for two reasons. One, I think the fact that Merfolk is as strong as it is, one of the reasons is on the back of this card.
It's the most powerful card in the deck.
Yeah, I think the fact that it's like comparable to Blood Moon at times, and then it also basically reads, target player is going to stumble on mana, all your creatures are unblockable for the rest of the game, is like very strong. And it just cantrips out of that.
Yeah.
It's very strong.
I totally agree. I adore this card. Yeah. Like, it's super creative. It's just there's a lot of design space for Brewers with this card. That's why it's in my list, because you can think about the different ways you can play this. It's cheap, it cantrips, it's a mana denial spell, but it's a cheap card that does cantrips. So if you have any way of returning it to your hand and replaying it, it's good. Like,
I also think, so we've talked about what cards should be and shouldn't be banned many times on this podcast, and recently, especially in the last couple months, I've been very hard on Blood Moon needs to go.
Yeah.
I think The main reason this card doesn't see play in many more decks is because Blood Moon is a card.
Right.
Because this is actively bad with Blood Moon.
Yep.
Because they Blood Moon, you Blood Moon or you this, well, they, like, well, I don't even know how what is what works. But in reality, once Blood Moon's gone, fingers crossed, this card becomes, like, what Splinter Twin puts in that slot.
Yeah, no, it's this is definitely a card that if you don't have Blood Moon, you're going to get more creative. It's just a little less powerful. But, I mean, it's cool, though, and it's cooler. It's, like, the fact that it's two, like I said, it's an enchantment. There's just a lot of clever things that I think you can be done with this card that aren't done, and maybe we'll see more of it. So my number six is Delver. We already talked about it. I do love Delver of Secrets. You talked about it. We didn't really explain what it is.
You can talk about how great it is.
Yeah. It's one blue for a 1/1, what's he, a wizard or something like that? He's a wizard cleric.
He's a human wizard.
Human wizard.
Not everything is a cleric.
He's a flip face card. He's one of these cards that got printed in Innistrad block, and he's a 1/1. At the beginning of your upkeep, look at the top card of your library. You may reveal a card. If it is an instant or sorcery card that is revealed this way, transform Delver of Secrets. Its flip side is that it is a human insect called Insectile Aberration, who is a 3/2 flyer. So Delver is one of the most powerful cards ever printed.
Creatures.
Yeah, at common. It was totally overlooked when it got printed, like, for a good solid month.
It's kind of like right now, we haven't seen what any of these new cards are really going to do in Modern or Legacy, because there haven't been – it's been a month or more than a month since the set, especially since the Battle for Zendikar was spoiled. And there just hasn't been a Modern tournament. There hasn't been a Legacy tournament. So same deal with kind of Delver back in the day.
Yeah.
And it took a while for it to catch on in Standard.
Do you remember how it worked?
The Illusions deck was the first one that played it, which was just like a mono blue aggro deck.
With Lord of the Unreal and Phantasmal Bear.
Yeah, a bunch of just illusions and illusion lords. And it just like played this because it was good.
Yeah.
And it just like just good enough as an aggressive creature. And then they realized, oh, no, this card's amazing. And then it became Spirits. And then it became the Geist, this... Restoration Angel, Delver deck that was problematic and was the second coming of Cobblade.
And this deck, this card is extremely famous, unless I'm totally mistaking this, but I'm pretty sure this card is extremely famous for being in that Esper Spirits deck that John Finkel played against Kibler.
Oh, yeah, in
Honolulu.
I think they both were playing this.
No, he was playing. Kibler was obviously playing his green red ramp deck.
With Primeval Titan
and Huntmaster of the Fells. And I was trying to remember if Finkel was playing Delvers in this deck.
Yeah, he was.
Positively.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, Delver's awesome. There's a lot of cool things that can be done with decks that are built around Delver of Secrets. Just like Nicodle. just like Nicodle, it dies to Bolt, so it's like sort of the same kind of thing, but it just doesn't require you to be so multicolored.
The two issues it has in Modern is it dies every removal spell under the sun, and the way it works, it gives them time, so it's not as punishing if they stumble. So like Nicodle, you are pretty much guaranteed that it's going to be a 3/3. You have to get pretty unlucky for you not to be able to pull that off. And then you get in there. So even if they have a bolt or they get a bolt in the first three turns, you're still going to get in there for 3 to 6 damage a lot of the time.
Sometimes they're played in the same deck. I've seen lists, Delver Zoo with Delver and Nicodle. I've tried to build.
Where Delver doesn't always pull that off, it's easy to kill, and it doesn't consistently flip. The reason it's much better in formats like Legacy is because you can play decks that run, 15 lands and 4 Brainstorm, 4 Ponder, 4 Gitaxian Probe. Like, you can, like, your deck is all spells and Delver, so, like, it works a lot better. And you have Force of Will and other ways to protect Delver.
And the most important thing, literally the most important thing about Brainstorm in conjunction with Delver is that Brainstorm's an instant. So if you want to play Delver on turn one, pass the turn, untap, and then before upkeep, Brainstorm yourself so you definitely flip your Delver.
You can.
You can do it, which is, like, that's the ultimate. That's, like, the ultimate. That's, like, what we're missing. If Modern ever gets... Brainstorm for two, it's the same card, just it's just two instead of three, you probably will see that played with Delver, and it'll become the thing. That's just what you do.
Right.
So, anyway.
One last thing on Delver before we move on, because we don't really talk about that often. My favorite thing about this card, and people might not know this, it's Jeff Goldblum, literally. Like, the card is Jeff Goldblum. So, it's based off of the movie The Fly. The art isn't Jeff Goldblum, but the story of the movie The Fly is Jeff Goldblum is a scientist who creates a teleportation device, and a fly accidentally gets in there, and he turns into an insect.
Yes.
So this is literally the story of Jeff Goldblum. He has a bug. They go into a device, and he accidentally creates
a fly
person.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's
fantastic.
Jeff Goldblum. Jeff Goldblum the card. All right, so.
What's your number five?
Number five? My number five is Manalik.
Okay, that's my number three.
Okay.
I feel like we're in the territory now where our top five is probably identical.
Or similar cards but different orders. I think I have at least one card that's not in your top five, probably.
I would be surprised if any of the five on my list here are not in your top five, but I could be wrong. So you went with Manalik at five. So we'll just... Okay, we'll talk about it now.
All right.
I mean, Manalik is ubiquitous with...
So the reason it's not as high as number three, which is where you have it, is I actually think just Remand is better. And
yeah.
I think, like, we were talking earlier about that Goldfish list where they... Manalik wasn't even on the list. Remand, Dispel, like, there were cards that we've talked about at much lower positions that were higher on that list at Common. I think Manalik's just not that good in this format. I think the format is very much, especially blue decks, often have to do with Path, which makes Manalik just worse. Manalik and Path do not get along. Manalik is also not that good with Snapcaster Mage.
Yeah.
Because snapbacking a lit Manalik generally is... after a point in time where they have enough mana to pay for the mana leak.
Yeah, and so many things cost one. I mean, it is true. But I don't think people knew that as much at the beginning. You used to see a lot more decks that had a lot more mana leaks.
I think in the history of the format, mana leak saw a lot more play.
Yeah.
Well, and mana leak will see play forever. Like, it's the reason it's in my top five. Like, my top five is all ubiquitously some of the most powerful cards ever printed. It is the third best counterspell in the format.
Yeah, well, so it's really funny, right, that we've watched sort of the mutation of Modern from beginning to end, where you basically have a couple different kinds of decks. The way that decks use CMC, the way that Commander Mana Cost, like the way that decks like sort of evaluate a card's cost now.
Mm-hmm.
It was very like when Chapin was telling us about the creation of that Grixis deck,
right.
And he was saying like there are control decks and there are tempo decks, but you can't play a traditional control deck in Modern with cards like Sphinx's Revelation, where you're just gonna like one for one and then draw a bunch of cards. He's like, it doesn't really work like that. You have to string together a bunch of marginal card advantage spells, chain them together to create card advantage, which ultimately ends up making sort of a tempo deck.
Mm-hmm.
So a card like Mana Leak doesn't work as well, and if that idea is the whole format, which is that you should be looking for the edges and the incremental advantages on one and two mana spells at all times. Do they cantrip? Do they exile something from a graveyard?
Right.
Do they gain you two life? Does it bounce something? Like, all those sort of things. Does it make something else you're going to play cheaper? Then this card is out of place because it's ultimately, in a lot of cases, going to do the same thing that Dispel would do.
Right.
It's right, or it's going to be a little bit less good than Spell Pierce, or it's not going to draw you a card or do more, so you should just be waiting out and playing your Cryptic Command. Like,
right.
And that's...
Though, thinking about it on this note, and this is a brew, but it's an Alex Kessler brew where it's just good cards versus a Ben Bateman brew, almost every single green-black X combination has seen a lot of play, but Bug.
Right.
Sultai. The relationship between Mana Leak and the permanents that it's generally good against and Abrupt Decay
right.
and the permanents and cards that card is generally good against is very interesting because they definitely pull the format in different directions.
Yeah, totally.
One of the reasons, classically, that Birthing Pod was so good was because it was resistant to Abrupt Decay.
Yeah, right.
But Mana Leak kind of wrecks it. So I'd be very interested to see a deck that kind of capitalize on both of those cards at the same time.
I've brewed plenty of times with Mana Leak, and I don't know that I would necessarily say that Remand is a better card than Mana Leak, because the nature of Modern is that one and two mana spells rule the format. So if you need to counter something and it costs two and they have four mana and you Mana Leak it, that's great. If you Remand it and you draw a card, that's fine, but they're just going to replay it, and then you kind of are screwed in some ways.
I think the point was that both of these cards lean you towards being tempo decks, and Remand is a better tempo card than Mana Leak
is. This is definitely true.
And Remand is also a better late-game card, because if you have a spell that you can cast twice, I'd much rather draw a card off of it than make you just spend all your mana that turn.
Agreed. I mean, I didn't put Remand ahead of it because it's an uncommon, but
yeah.
Mana Leak, I could see how Mana Leak is a little worse than I have it here.
For the record, and I didn't put Dispel on my list because I kind of knew you put it on there and it kind of fell off, but Dispel sees more play than Mana Leak does.
Yes, and I agreed. And I think from a Modern standpoint, it's definitely the more efficient card than Mana Leak.
Sure.
But if you were just going to sort of in a vacuum look at all the cards that are legal in Modern, Mana Leak is a better card than Dispel. it's significantly better. Yeah. It's just Dispel.
No, I think Mana Leak is better than Dispel. Dispel just sees more play right now.
Right
for
now.
The reason
exactly. Because three months ago, like before the summer season, I would
before Collected Company existed, before Dragons of Tarkir, Dispel would have never been on this list.
Yeah, it would have been a fringe sideboard card. So,
what is your number five?
Cranial Plating.
Okay.
And Plating was another card that
so
was shifted.
Cranial Plating is my number three.
It's number three. Okay.
Yeah. So our fives and threes switched.
So we'll just hit four and then two. So Plating is interesting, right? Because Plating is the only card on my list here that is clearly
only in one deck.
Yeah. And I hate using cards like that in lists like this. The difference between, say, like this, and let's just say that
which
I had.
Which is interesting because, like.
You use Pestermite?
Well, no. So I think classically when we make these top 10 lists, I much more often lean on
the meta cards. Yeah.
Not even meta cards, but like when we did top 10 artifacts, I had a bunch of affinity cards because like even though those decks aren't versatile and aren't in a bunch of decks, affinity is the best artifact deck in the history of the format and will be forever.
Yep.
So Cranial Plating to me, which is obviously why I have it higher, but like in general, I put those kind of cards on my list, but in deck building situations, you're much more into weird specific cards and are much more into generically powerful cards.
Right, right.
I just think that's interesting that like our All right, continuing.
I mean the reason that Plating to me goes here is and the difference between say like this and Pestermite is that Pestermite doesn't have if you want to play a flyer, an instant speed flyer even. There's better options than Pestermite. If you want to play a card that has a tempo advantage that flashes in and like bounces a land or like taps something or but gives you an advantage, there are better cards to play than Pestermite. If you want to play a fairies deck, there's better fairies to play than Pestermite. So the only time that Pestermite sees play is it copies 5 and 6 and sometimes 7 and 8, but usually 5 and 6 of a better uncommon that's in its place in one deck in Modern. Whereas with Cranial Plating, though it does
like four decks, but fine.
Cranial Plating sees played literally
more,
in one deck,
one deck.
One deck. The reason that I think that Cranial Plating has more design space is because it would make my list is that it references one thing. Your creature gets huge based on the number of artifacts you have. That means that at any point in time, if there's another way to build an affinity deck or a deck that utilizes a huge amount of artifacts, you could use Cranial Plating in that deck because it's doing something extremely powerful.
I think the way I came at it, and it's maybe the reason it's higher, is it's similar to that concept, but almost the opposite in the sense that the Pestermite card in Affinity is more of the Ornithopter or the Memnite.
That's fair.
Where it's a role player that combos with the really powerful cards, and you want as many of the cards that work with your really powerful cards as possible to make those cards work. But in reality, it's pretty replaceable.
Yep.
Like theoretically, Pestermite could be replaced by that new 3/3 green blue Bounding Crassus, or it could be replaced in white or other colors. Cranial Plating is arguably the reason you do it. Like Cranial Plating is much more similar to Kiki Jiki or Splinter Twin,
right?
Specifically Splinter Twin, in the sense that you are playing all these artifacts that are kind of bad. Like, Memnite is a bad card.
Yes, yeah,
but
good.
Because Cranial Plating and Ravager exist, it's a deck that it goes into is very good.
Yeah.
And I would even argue that Cranial Plating, if Ravager was common, I would have Cranial Plating higher than Ravager.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I can't give you like a list that comes to mind for me where I would use Plating in a different way. It's sort of more like I'm sort of thinking like
versus Ravager, which like there's like Aristocrat artifact deck could theoretically play it.
Well, with like Plating, for instance, like what if you were gonna build some sort of like, okay, I'm gonna build the hyper infect version that utilizes a lot of artifacts but doubles up on the effect of them because
sounds great.
And it's like similar because you already using
if you had artifact lands, that deck would be nuts.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And so I think that anytime I just think that any time you – anyway, whatever. We don't have to harp on it, but that's the reason for me.
Well, I think – and when it comes down to it, it's one of the most powerful cards, period, in the format.
Right.
There is an entire deck that has been a tier one since literally day one of the format deck that exists because this card exists.
The linchpin of the deck would not exist.
And, yes, this is in 15 decks like the rest of my top five.
Right.
But – this has been in almost just as much top eights, if not more, than some of these cards.
Fair enough. Let's continue moving down the line.
In fact, my number four has been in less, and which is why Cranial Plating is higher than my number four.
Which is?
Gitaxian Probe.
Oh, that's also my number four.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Perfect.
Look
okay.
at that.
So
our top
our
three
are the exact same.
Is, yeah.
Okay. All right. So Gitaxian Probe, For those who don't know, it's Phyrexian mana. That means you can either pay one blue mana or pay two life, and you get to look at your opponent's hand and draw a card. It is a free spell. It does a lot of really powerful things, especially since Delve came on the scene. It's become a staple of the format. So if you're playing Delve cards and or Prowess cards, you're most likely playing this card. The information you get from it is very good. The fact that it makes it kind of deck, it makes your deck kind of a more of a 56 card deck versus a 60 card deck. Cantrips in general have been very good. It's very good with Snapcaster Mage.
Yes.
You can play Snapcaster Mage as a tempo two drop versus a random spell later on.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, it's anytime you can play free spells in a format, like that's what I'm sort of talking about when you're thinking about like the mutation of the format. And as it's each strategy and each way of playing has sort of moved more and more and more into this hyper-efficient, sort of like the way Legacy operates. It's much modern, so much closer to Legacy now than it ever used to be. Just the way that the decks function.
It's black is – it's missing its blue dominance, which is fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's in some ways, it's better for that reason. But Gitaxian Probe is your classic card. It's just like
right. –
it's not that powerful, but it's so good. It's so good in terms of, like, what you want to be doing. Like, this tapped in – like, this sort of, like – what the word I'm looking for? This very, like, sort of strategic tap dance that you're doing often with your opponent where you're just, like – I can go for it, but I need to know what they have. One more card would be great. I'll pay a little bit of life to have a little bit more of an advantage. Oh, this card makes my deck a little smaller. You know.
Well, I mean, like, that example with Snapcaster Mage.
Yeah.
The fact that I can use it, see what they have, be like, oh, tempo would be great right now. They have no way to stop me just getting it for 6 damage with a 2-1 on turn 2. Makes that play worth it. Or you don't do it and you wait till later. Like, the information is key, and Gitaxian Probe gives you a lot of information while helping you out. The other one is, you know, Chapin recently wrote an article saying Abbot of Carolkeep is the fifth 2-drop. So there's always this argument that there are five, there have been four epic 2-drop rares.
Card advantageous 2-drops.
Not even card advantageous, like just the best 2-drop creature, one for each color.
Card advantage is, as he said when he spoke to us, like in the sense that card advantage can be generated in a number of ways.
Sure. I mean, like, because Tarmogoyf is the green one, and I would argue that that's not a card advantage card, other than the fact that it just is bigger than everything else your opponent
has.
Yeah,
so exactly. You're getting ahead by the fact that you have something that is unanswerable by their means
early. Right. And he has said that Abbot, of Carolkeep is his 2-drop. I personally think that the 2-drop, even though it doesn't
is Eidolon
a Great Rival. But beyond that, that would not be true if this card didn't exist. If
the Gitaxian
Probe wasn't a card, Abbot wouldn't be played. Not it wouldn't be playable, but it would be much worse.
Yes. I mean, and also evidenced by Mishra's Bauble. So let's move on to number two, maybe. I guess we have, if we both have Probe.
Oh, so for record, my number three was Cranoplate, and his was Mana Leak.
So let's just move clear on. It out.
Yeah.
I'm guessing Lightning Bolt's your number one?
Yeah.
And number two is Serum Visions?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
All right. So Serum Visions, I don't know how much more we could say about this card. Like, we talked about how good Brainstorm would be in the format. We've talked about how Ponder would have been, this is the Batman. I've always said it. Serum Visions is Batman of the format in the sense it is not the hero we want, but it is the hero we deserve.
Yeah. Serum Visions is sort of hilarious because it's very clearly the correct power level for the format. And I remember all the various times in the format when, like, cantrips have been discussed, like the original banning of Preordain and Ponder, when people used to play a lot more decks that played this and a lot of sleight of hands, sort of like trying to figure out, like, what's correct. Used to be only in combo decks. Then nowadays, you'll just see a lot more decks that play a lot more Serum Visions just to play a card that lets you move through your library a little faster and draw a card and
the
do
Delve
something.
The Delve cards have just put it over the top. The fact that Delve and Prowess, those are the two of the mechanics out of Khan's Block, encourage, and one of them is now Evergreen, encourage cantripping spells to such a degree that Serum Visions is just great. Obviously, I'd be rather playing with one of the three better versions of this. What's interesting to me about this card, and it doesn't get said a lot, is this card is actively better with Delver of Secrets than Preordain is.
Because Preordain, you are looking at two and then drawing.
So only the top card of the cards you're looking at, only one of them will be able to flip that Delver because you're going to be drawing one.
Right.
And with this, you draw a card, and then for sure you can set up so Delver two turns. So if you turn one Serum Visions, you can make it so your turn three Delver flips, guaranteed.
Your turn two Delver flips on turn three.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That you can't do with Preordain. It's impossible.
Even though Preordain's definitely a better card.
Yeah. In every other way. But with Delver, Serum Visions is better.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I like Serum Visions, and I find myself playing more and more of them. I think the other thing that's great about a card like Serum Visions, and this is better than Gitaxian Probe and the reason that it's higher, it's not only good and powerful as a card, but like in Magic, we are happier as a game when we get to do more and interact more and like just like see more, think more, like sort of feel like you have more and more control of what's happening in the game. It makes the game experience for everybody more fun. So this is a great card for that because it's appropriately costed. It's powerful enough. It doesn't feel like you are dawdling or wasting your time, but it also isn't so powerful that you feel like when someone casts Serum Visions, they're getting way ahead.
And for the record, the difference between, because I don't think we've explained the difference between Preordained and Serum Visions, it's a very small facet that completely alters how the card works. With Serum Visions, you draw a card first. With Preordained, you draw a card after you scry.
And they both scry two, and they both cost one, and they're both blue, and they're both
the exact same card, but the text is organized differently.
And if you guys are interested and don't know, look up Ponder and look up Ponder and Brainstorm, and those are like the legacy versions. But
yeah, those are the better two. The one thing I will say is that this card, like, isn't just in commons one of the best cards in the format. Like that list we talked about, it is the second most played card in the format. Period.
I would say that like Lightning Bolt and Serum Visions of the cards on this list are two, maybe the only two of my top 10 that would actually make the top 10 modern cards. I don't think any of the rest of these cards would make the top 10 modern cards.
I agree with that, which is fine. I mean, maybe Cranial Plating.
Yeah, it's possible.
I would argue that maybe Cranial, like, just because you could argue that it's better than Ravager, and I would be hard for me not to put one affinity card on that
list. It's a huge card. I mean, I don't think any of the rest of these cards, though. Maybe Probe now, but I doubt it.
Probe would be a bubble. Yeah, I agree. On the Lightning Bolt, I'm to see how many lists this is in the top two, if not number one, that we're going to go through. Because it's already been number one in two lists so far.
But top 10 red cards.
And top 10.
Top 10 commons. And I think when we did the staples of the format, or when, what was the episode that we did? Oh, answers. Catch-alls.
Oh, yeah.
That wasn't really a ranking. That was a...
It might have been in our top 10 Masters of Modern cards.
Maybe.
Our Modern Masters cards. Modern Masters 2.
Yeah, it's possible.
It might have been number one. I don't know for sure. You remind us. Oh, and that might have been. Yeah, who knows? But
it'll end up in another list for sure. I mean, the thing about Lightning Bolt is Lightning Bolt's beautiful in Modern. It's perfect. It's like
I don't know if it's perfect. I would argue it's possibly too good, but that's.
It's just right though. I mean, it does the way that it sets the format up. The whole like four toughness thing. I love the way that sort of interacts with four mana, turn four.
Right.
It's all of those things with this card, the way that this plays with Snapcaster.
It's very, very good.
I love the card, and it's for anyone who doesn't know by now, it's one red
it's
for an
the pillar,
instant.
It's
that
a pillar
deals
of the format.
Three damage to target creature or player.
Yeah.
You know, we've said it before on another podcast, but we'll say it again. It's funny when you look at the original cycle of five. In the original set of Magic, there were five one-drop instants that did something
Using the number three.
Using the number three. And the one in red was Lightning Bolt. For one red, you got three damage. So the one in blue was Ancestral Recall.
Yeah.
You got to draw three cards.
For one blue instant speed.
Yeah.
Arguably, what's interesting about that cycle is as powerful as Lightning Bolt is, it's probably still the third. It's the middle.
Yeah, because Dark Ritual costs one black and is add three mana to your mana pool.
Right.
That it's black for an instant. And then
Giant Growth is a beautiful card, but it's not Modern playable.
One green target creature gets +3 procedural on its turn. Also really good. And then Healing Self. which is the white one. Which like I feel like there should be a version at some point where if there's ever like a Time Spiral-esque kind of set again, they should design an overwhelmingly powerful one mana white card that does something good that would like complete the cycle.
A supplemental set.
Call it like not Healing Solve.
I guess it would be one mana make 3/1/1 white token soldiers. That would be the card I would design. It does something different than the other four cards did.
Yeah. Like would that be too good for Legacy?
Maybe, but I mean, you put it in Commander product and you ban it if you need to.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, Healing Solve, for those that don't know,
is don't want it
one white instant, gain 3 life or prevent 3 damage to target creature, or prevent the next 3 damage or whatever. It's just
arguably Lightning Bolt and Dark Ritual are possibly too powerful for most formats. So yeah, it's fine.
So anyway, Lightning Bolt, awesome, great card. This is kind of exciting because we have a few minutes and we both have a list of honorable mention / cards we wish saw more play.
Before we get there, if you guys have your favorite common, please tweet at us. We are at the MMCast. We'd love to hear what you guys think is the best commons in the format. If you think we were wrong on a card, if you think we missed something, let us know.
Yeah, and just for the record, guys, right now, We are somewhere in the low 900s of our Twitter following, and
we would love to be at 1,000.
Yeah. So what we're gonna do here? I know we just gave away a ton of stuff last week.
This list
of 10 commons. Every card that was included in our two lists, I believe there was only like 12 or something like that, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
Whoever is our 1,000th Twitter follower, when that happens, we're going to send you one of each of these commons. And I know that's not the most amazing thing, but because we're announcing it on this episode.
Serum Visions in there?
Yeah, Serum Visions is like $6-$7, maybe more, 10.
12 bucks?
Something like that.
It's 12 bucks.
But yeah, we'll send you probes, got to be a couple bucks. We'll send you one of all of these cards, and we'll ship it to you, and you just need to get in touch with us when you are our 1,000th follower. So I would rally. Oh, this should be pointed out, actually. If we get to 1,000 within, should we say one episode or two? Should we say one?
One.
One episode. Yeah. We have to get to 1,000 Twitter followers by one episode to give this away. So
And yeah.
That's the thing, guys. That's going to do it. So let's just list the cards off. Lightning Bolt, Serum Visions, Mana Leak, Cataxian Probe, Cranial Plating, Delver of Secrets, Terminate, Ancient Grudge, Dispel, Gurmag Angler.
Pestermite, Spreading Sea, Wild Nactyl.
That is the 13 cards you will get. Let's get into our honorable mentions.
Sure.
This is exciting. Do you want to go first or should I?
I'll go first because I kind of want to explain it. Rancor.
Okay.
Originally in my list, and then we decided arbitrarily that it doesn't count because it was only a...
Uncommon when it got reprinted in M12?
Non-modern set, so it's only been uncommon as it exists in modern. Rancor's really good. It's a 1 green mana, 2/0. Maybe the best green enchantment.
Clarify that. It's 1 green mana for a creature aura that is creature gets +2/+0 and
yes,
trample,
sorry.
And when that creature hits the graveyard... No, it's when Rancor is placed into a graveyard from play.
Yeah.
It returns to your hand. So the only way to get rid of a Rancor is if you kill a creature in response to the enchantment.
Correct.
Or
Thoughtseize. Or
exile it. Or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's ridiculously powerful and always has been.
So during the original era of when the M sets were coming out, Wizards had a policy where every core set, they would print one new classic card that was epically powerful in each of the colors at common or uncommon. And the first set, M10, had Lightning Bolt.
Yep.
We haven't. Have you talked about Lightning Bolt today?
And number two had Mana Leak.
Number two had Mana Leak.
M11, yeah.
And number three, I think, had Rancor and was the green version of that.
But it was color shifted.
No.
Or I'm sorry, it was not color shifted. It was rarity shifted.
It got shifted up to uncommon. It was common and then becoming uncommon. And then black, they realized, I think, after Rancor that, we're making mistakes of printing.
We should print Dark Ritual. That's a good idea.
So they didn't print a black and a white one eventually. Poor black and white. Always getting shafted. that's my number one of the honorable mentions.
Card is great.
I'm saving the best for last.
Yes, we already talked about Spreading Seas. That was on my list. I'm going to go with a funky one. This is, if you've ever heard us on this cast before talk about Wizards decks or things like that, or like just fringe decks, this is a card that sees like no play, but I think it's a really cool card and most people don't know about it. So it's a card called Vedalken Ethermage, and it's one of these weird future shifted cards from Future Sight. It is one blue and a colorless for a flash Vedalken Wizard that is a 1/2. Now it says when Vedalken Ethermage comes into play, return target sliver to its owner's hand. I know. Sounds totally unexciting.
Yeah, that's not what it says.
Here's what makes the card good. It has an ability called Wizard Cycling. So for 3 colorless at instant speed, you can discard Vedalken Ethermage from your hand and search your library for any creature or spell that has the card type, creature type, wizard. Which means any changeling, there's a couple tribal wizard spells from like Lorwyn block, and then lastly, just any wizard ever, which
includes Delver of Secrets, which includes
Snapcaster Mage, Venser. Like, there's a ton of wizards, so many wizards. There's combo cards that are wizards. There's all kinds of stuff in.
Includes my next card.
Yeah, and so I think that this is one of those cards that, like, if you ever build a deck that, like, functionally has a wizard that is part of your combo or is, like, just the linchpin, a lot of people don't know this card exists, and it's a very, very, very good card for what you're trying to do. So it's something to keep
remember
in mind.
Remember, that cycling can happen also at instant speed. So isn't, you're not
end
like
of turn.
Tutoring for 3 mana.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
At sorcery speed. My card, I'll join in on the theme of wizards that are toolboxy, Trinket Mage.
Oh, yeah. But that's uncommon.
Nope. It was a common originally.
And then it was reprinted.
It was reprinted as an uncommon.
Oh, but as a common originally in Fifth Dawn, it was a common.
Yes.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
I love Trinket Mage.
Trinket Mage is 1 blue, 2 colorless for a 2/2 wizard human. And you may search your library for any artifact with converted mana cost 1 or less.
Right.
So
we need that sound, that drop, you know? The toolbox.
Yeah.
Toolbox.
Yeah. I remember.
I always wanted time. That one. Yeah. Yeah, I love Dream Mage.
This
okay.
isn't radio, right? We don't have sound effects.
Yeah.
There's not a producer behind the glass.
That's just a C-3PO life size cutout.
The card's sweet. You can get so many cool artifacts. Think about them.
Yeah.
All the trinkets.
There's so dirtily.
Commander, it's like great because you get top or soul ring. But in this, you get engineered explosives. You get.
Yeah, everybody definitely. Knows. Yeah. It's a good card. It's a good card.
Right, what's your number?
This is one, again, we've talked about on this cast. And I'm going to pair this because it goes with another card. So the card I'm going to mention is Scythe Tiger. I know you're laughing because I love this card. Scythe Tiger's great.
It's so much worse than two of the other cards that are pretty much the same.
Except that this one can't be lightning bolted. So
true,
this is one
you
green.
Have to sacrifice a land.
Look, it's better than you think. It's one green for a 3/2 creature cat with shroud. When Scythe Tiger enters the battlefield, sacrifice it unless you sacrifice a land. So obviously, nobody likes to sacrifice lands in Modern. The question is, how important?
Well, I think that's. I love fetching. That's great.
How many lands do you need for a deck to be functional, and how far ahead could you get early on enough if you had like a deck that relied on this and something else that you wouldn't be able to just win the game if you played a one mana 3/2 on turn one that could not be lightning bolted? Could you get far ahead? So the other card that I have on this list is Vapor Snag.
But it's
one
also
blue.
A 3/2 with no evasion, correct?
Yeah. Well, so this is what I'm saying, Vapor Snag. So Vapor Snag, one blue for an instant, return target creature to its owner's hand. That creature's controller loses one life. So if you could envision some sort of tempo-y deck that played maybe like this and Nacatl and Delver and Vapor Snag or something, I don't know, this just seems like a trump card that you would maybe be able to play early, and it might be better than you think. I don't know. I'm just saying...
Look, you said I don't know like three times.
Look,
in one
Kessler,
sentence.
You know I'm always trying to identify cards that are underplayed and have unique abilities. Give me another card that is a 3-power creature in Modern for one mana that has some sort of immune to removal ability. Is there another one that exists?
No.
Exactly.
I would argue that Goblin Guide has immune to it ability because it comes into play at haste on turn zero and
it
hits
just,
them for two.
And gives them a land and then gets killed.
Gives them a land. I'm going to. And burn? Who cares? They can have all the lands they want.
Maybe the deck plays Goblin Guide also. It could.
All the one drops. But yeah, but you're sacking lands, so how are you going to keep your color straight? I don't know.
All right. If you're listening and you think that Scythe Tiger has legs, also, for the record, one of you did listen once when I mentioned it and sent me a list because you thought it had legs, which I appreciated immensely. I appreciated the support. But if we have more listeners now that like Scythe Tiger, you just let me know. What do you got, Kessler?
Are you going to send each one of them a Scythe Tiger?
I'll sign a Scythe Tiger. I'll friggin' if you...
For all the people that message in, you'll give one. You're in charge, so I'm going to leave you in charge of this.
No, I'm not promising. I'm not promising because if I get like 14 people that are like, send me a signed Scythe Tiger...
No, you give one at random to the people that mentioned Scythe Tiger.
I'm now handling the Masters of Modern Scythe Tiger account.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
sure.
Between now and next week.
You want to just put another contest on the board? Here, I got a contest for
no,
you guys.
No, okay. We don't want it. All right. All right. No. No Scythe Tigers. You don't want that card. It's bad. All right. So my card, next one, Mana Tithe.
Okay.
One white.
Oh, I forgot about that. I love Mana Tithe.
Spell counter target spell unless its controller pays one for one.
Interesting.
White. It's the only like straight up white counterspell.
Feels like it could be played pretty well with Scythe Tiger.
It's four spike. I rolled my eyes. You can't see it. I've seen every time I've ever seen this card get played, it's been a total blowout because no one ever expects someone with one white mana open or any amount of white mana open to be able to counter a spell. So like in Tithe decks or decks that have, you know, green white hate bears, even in like, to be totally honest, blue-white decks that just like can tap out their blue spells that just get someone, it's great.
I think this card's sweet. Yeah. Like, it's definitely a card that in weird brews, weird like early game tempo-y brews I've tried to come up with over the years, this is a total consideration. I mean, Force Spike isn't legal. Force Spike is good. If Force Spike were legal, it might see play in blue decks. I don't really know.
I feel like if Force Spike was legal, people would just think that they should be playing with it, which means that Mana Tithe should probably be seeing more play than it is.
Well, so you guys may recall, and Kessler, I know you've recalled, like at various times we've talked about the whole idea that there's so many 2-power 1-drops now that exist that are legal in Modern, some of which have like pretty good fringe abilities, like Dryad Arbor, obviously. Not Dryad Arbor, Dryad Militant is pretty powerful.
Right.
It's good. Obviously, the Soldier of the Pantheon is pretty good. It interacts pretty well and has like, you know, immunity to a lot of cards. So it's the sort of thing where it's just like what we're talking about with Scythe Tiger, where it's like if you get a threat with 2 or 3 power on turn 1, and you have some sort of tempo-y way to back it up. I don't know, maybe like a mono white deck. I'm going to move on, keep going.
All right. So yeah.
I'm going to use my favorite one, because if we're running out of time, I want to make sure I get it in. I mentioned it earlier, Survivor of the Unseen. So this is a really bad Magic card, but it is a really bad Magic card that does something that almost no card in Modern does, which is what we talked about earlier, which is that it is one blue.
We already talked about this card today.
And 2 colorless. We barely talked about it. For a 2/1 human wizard, cumulative upkeep, 2 colorless. It has an ability that states tap, draw 2 cards, then put a card from your hand on top of your library. That instant speed 2 brainstorm for 2 I talked about, that's what this card actually does. So you play it for 3, you untap with it. In response to the upkeep trigger, you tap it, draw 2, and then put 1 hand from your hand on top of your library. You can set up any kind of like a miracles thing. If you want to pay for it once, and then the next turn not pay for it, you'll get to activate it twice. You could play it with Lightning Greaves or something like that and get haste on it the first time. I'm just saying, find me another card that puts a card from my hand on top of my library, and I'll be happy. No one else, no other card does it, so there might be something to it. Just saying.
It seems really bad.
It might be really bad. I love the card.
It's a 3-mana sorcery thing that like may do you something on the 4th turn, kind of.
Interesting that it's a wizard, and Vedok and Nethermaid searches wizards. That's so bad. It's really terrible. What else you got?
A slightly better version of what you're Mystical Teachings.
Oh, yeah, Teachings is sweet.
Yeah, so Mystical Teachings is normally 3-mana and a blue. Search your library for an instant card or a card with flash. Reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library, and then you can flash it back for 1 black and 5 colorless. Yeah. There are a lot of teaching decks that have been around in the history of this format. None of them ever been tier 1. They're all really sweet. Andrew Brown, friend of the podcast, actually, like, the first deck I ever played against him in Modern, he had Teachings.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Teachings is great. I don't know. I love, we mentioned with Trinket Mage, the toolbox button.
Yeah. Toolbox. Okay. You and I once built like a rock deck, and it was like this weird thing back when Deathrite Shaman was legal. And we had this, it was basically a lot like the Hate Bears decks you see
it's
now.
It's interesting, of the cards you've mentioned, this is probably the only one that so far is like,
is legitimate. Well, I'll pair it with the other card here just because they are similar. Okay. So it's Simeon Spirit Guide and Ancient Stirrings. And they are both cards that see a pretty good amount of play in Modern in similar kind of decks.
Didn't I argue for a second that Simeon Spirit Guide should be banned? I might have. No longer believe that because it's been cut from most decks, but sure, continue.
So what I was saying about a rock deck was when we were coming up with it, the idea was if you played a bunch of Ghost Quarters in your deck and you played Crucible of Worlds, that if you then played Ancient Stirrings, it would function as your turn one gets me any color I need, gets me my copy of Crucible, and also gets me copies of Ghost Quarter.
The important thing was that it was a deck that was trying to function with Avon Mind Sensor and the 1-mana, 1-white Avon Mind Sensor, but you can like pay 3 mana to get out of it.
Leon and Arbiter.
Using Path and Crucible and Ghost Quarter.
Yeah.
And because you couldn't search your deck to get to those cards if you needed them, and they're important to kind of accomplish what you're trying to do. Ancient Stirrings was kind of a pseudo tutor because it let you dig.
Yeah, it was actually kind of similar to a lot of the Hate Bears decks that Kibler ended up like playing and rolling out there that have become a little more popular. They just changed it. They didn't go with our whole like Crucible of Worlds package.
Right.
But I just think that Ancient Stirrings, because it references colorless, and colorless is such a broad term, is you can build creative decks that utilize lands and artifacts and various other things pretty well. The other card here, I reference the Simeon Spirit Guide, which is 1 red, 2 colorless for a 2/2 ape creature or something like that.
It doesn't matter, because what it actually does is you can exile it from your hand to make 1 red mana.
Yeah, it's the original. It's a color shifted version of Elvish Spirit Guide, which is the exact same thing, but it's a fairy or something, and it's green from Alliances.
Right.
But the reason that I put Spirit Guide here
it's a 4 of in Goryeo's Vengeance decks.
Yeah.
And it saw some play, and now they play like a 1 of in Amulet decks.
Yeah.
And technically, you can cut them or you can play more. It's what allows a lot of decks in this format to win on turn 1.
Yes. So the whole thing with Simeon Spirit Guide, the reason it's here is just like, you think about the way a lot of decks work. You think about the importance of turns 2, 3, and 4 in Modern, and how important we say often when we're doing a deck tech and we're doing a turn-by-turn breakdown of, it really matters who goes first here, blah, blah, blah. If you can get a turn ahead by using Simeon Spirit Guide in a lot of decks, I don't know that it's incorrect. It's probably right to experiment with a lot of decks and see, how does this deck function if I have 4 copies of Simeon Spirit Guide here? Maybe I can get ahead. That's why I put it on the list.
It's kind of very similar to the opposite of Gitaxian Probe, where Gitaxian Pro makes your deck smaller, it keeps your hand full, and it gives you information. This gets your deck out faster, but makes your deck almost thicker because you basically like are mulliganing for that effect. And it has a little bit more of a risk. It's interesting. Definitely a good card.
Yeah.
I once said it should be banned. That good, but I don't no longer believe that. My next card is Faithless Looting.
Oh, yeah, Looting's sweet. It's good in a lot of decks.
I think the reason I put it here is it doesn't see a lot of play in a lot of decks. I think it's probably more playable in decks than it gets credit for. I think some decks could just use it as card filtering, and it doesn't see play in that capacity. It really only sees play in decks that involve the graveyard, and it's best in those decks, but I would be interested to see this kind of card seeing more play. We talked about how cantrips are good. This is a little worse than a cantrip, but it's a little bit better because of the flashback. Interesting with prowess cards.
Totally.
Seems sweet.
Yep.
Is that your last card?
That's my last one.
So I saved the most powerful card for last. And really, this is better than
is
all
it Spell
the
Sky?
Other cards. No, it's a Darksteel Citadel.
Oh, God. It got shifted to uncommon. Yeah, okay, but it is a common originally.
No. Yeah.
We don't even need to talk about this because we literally, if you go back and listen to the top 10 artifacts, like we had this argument once already.
It actually was like on my top 10 at one point, but my top 10 at that point had 25 cards in it.
Yeah.
And it was like,
no, and I like,
it,
I'm
it
not
survived
even
out of funniness and then I just kept cutting it. It's not serious.
It got cut out of funniness from my list because we had that. All right, we're running out of time.
All right. So that's it for the episode. I want to thank you guys for listening. I want to remind you to go check out our sister podcast, The Command Zone. They're also on rocketjump.com. You can find them on Twitter at The Command Cast. We are at The MM Cast, which is important because you can tweet at us apparently to win contests that we keep promising you.
Yeah, exactly. We've sent people things we promise. And then also, this contest we just referenced one more time, just in case you were curious and didn't remember, we're at like 9-something, and we need like 70 to 80 more followers to get to 1,000, which would be a huge thing for us. We've done this for a year. If we get to 1,000 in the next week, whoever the 1,000th Twitter follower is will get those 13 comments, and we will, if you would like us to, sign all of them. If you don't want us to, we'll gladly not.
Right.
Just
let
us
know. Or we can sign all of them, but Serum Visions, if that's...
Yeah,
because that's really the only card that's... I guess that and Cranial Plating are both worth something.
You just let us know.
Yeah,
but the point is, you'll win it if you're the 1,000th follower, so help us get there. We love you guys. You make this podcast happen, and it's the coolest. So I'm Ben Bateman. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm Kess Wiley. I'm Alex Kessler, and you can find me at Kess Wiley on everything. If you want to find me on like streamy things, Xander574.
Oh, you know what? And like, I think I might have mentioned this one time ever. I'm not really sure if I've ever talked about it. No. I don't know if any of you guys love action movies. I love action movies. I do this podcast video thing called Action Movie Anatomy, and it's basically like me and one of my good buddies, and we go on camera at the Popcorn Talk Network every week on Wednesdays, streaming live at 12:30. We break down our favorite action movies from like the 80s, 90s, and today, and we have like a whole system of like recast and fist pump moment and everything. And we have a super good time. I know a couple crossover people have like just happened upon it, but if you like action movies, you should go to, I think it's just
We'll link to it on rocketjump.com. We'll actually probably talk about it a little bit more in the future, so you can kind of explain a little bit more about it. We are running out of time. So thank you guys for listening. We will see you guys next week.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.